The science supporting our ability to shape our bodies, to control how much muscle we have, to control where fat is deposited, which fat stores are mobilized when you lose weight, in other words, what we call body composition, has recently made some important leaps forward. This becomes especially important during any effort to lose weight. If you've been following my Define Health conversations, you know that reducing calories virtually guarantees disaster, as it causes loss of lean muscle mass, the primary determinant of metabolic rate, as well as other health problems. You lose, say, 30 pounds by reducing calories. About 10 pounds of the lost weight is muscle. This causes your metabolic rate to drop, typically about 10 to 25%. It means that even if you maintain a low-calorie intake, you will regain the weight. And the weight you regain is mostly fat, meaning you are worse off than when you began the diet. So in this episode of Defiant Health, let's take a more scientific approach to shifting body composition, including losing weight, to gain advantages for better appearance as well as health, with none of the booby traps set by conventional weight loss methods. Later in the podcast, let's talk about Defiant Health's sponsor, Paleo Valley, their fermented grass-fed beef sticks, bone broth protein rich in collagen, organic super greens, and low-carb superfood bars are wonderful additions to your healthy lifestyle. They're also expanding their Wild Pastures service that delivers 100% grass-fed and finished pastured meats from a regenerative family farm right to your door. And look for their interesting new products, such as chocolate-flavored grass-fed bone broth protein, grass-fed organ complex in capsule form, and essential electrolytes to add to your intake of electrolytes, such as magnesium. I'd also like to introduce Defiant Health's newest sponsor, Cutting Edge Cultures, a source for excellent starter cultures to create your own fermented foods. For those of you who want to be more confident in making your own fermented vegetables, yogurts, and kefirs, Cutting Edge Cultures provides convenient starter cultures that begin with specific beneficial microbes while also making the process faster, meaning you will create healthy fermented foods typically within 48 hours or so, depending on what you're fermenting. I'll tell you more about their terrific products later in the podcast. So let's talk about this idea, the keys to body shape, muscle, and fat. So it's important to recognize that you do have fairly powerful, effective control over body shape, where the bulges are or are not, where fat gets deposited, how much muscle you have. You're in control of all these factors, but you likely wouldn't know that if you rely on conventional health and dietary advice. Let's first start with going through, what do doctors and dietitians and other people who counsel people on losing weight, what do they tell us? Well, they typically tell us that calories are important, that calories in, calories out, that is, the more calories you take in, the more you have to burn if you want to maintain normal weight. Or they say things like move more, eat less, right? Burn more calories, take in fewer calories. Or push the plate away, or use smaller utensils and plates and bowls so that your meals look bigger. Well, I think you all recognize this is nonsense. This stuff does not work. It might work for a short time, occasionally, but is not a consistent long-term key to success in managing your body composition. There are a number of reasons for this, but one of the primary, most important reasons why that advice to cut calories is not only ineffective but dangerous is that when you cut calories, the longer you cut calories, let's say you're ordinarily accustomed to eating 2,000 calories per day and you cut it back to 1,500 or 1,400 calories per day. There is upfront weight loss, no question about that. The problem is your body perceives it as starvation or inadequate resources, and it reduces its metabolic rate, its basal metabolic rate. So in other words, where you were relying on 2,000 calories per day, now your body's relying on, say, 1,500 calories per day, and it reduces the energy burn rate. Now, that reduction in basal metabolic rate can persist. It can persist for many years. So even if you maintain your low calorie intake, you regain weight. And if you revert back to your former calorie intake, say 2,000 calories per day, you will gain massive quantities of weight. So any method of cutting calories will reduce your metabolic rate and then allow weight regain. The reason for this to occur, the drop in metabolic rate, is largely because when you lose weight, approximately one-third of the weight you lose is muscle. And muscle is the major determinant, the main determinant of your metabolic rate. So if you lost 30 pounds, say by cutting calories, 10 of those pounds, more or less, are muscle. And that's what leads to that lower metabolic rate and makes it much easier to regain weight even while you're maintaining a low calorie input. Now, it's also important to recognize that a low calorie diet is not the only way that people reduce calories. They often do it also with pharmaceutical agents. So whether the drug is Contrave or one of the new GLP-1 agonists have become very, very popular. These are the drugs like Wegovy and Ozempic and Rybelsus and some others that do indeed lead to weight loss. But how do they work? Well, they work primarily by reducing your calorie intake and also slowing digestion in the stomach. But the net effect is a reduction in calories. So guess what happens when you stop the drug? You regain all or nearly all of the weight. Now, you may have spent $20,000 to lose 50 pounds, and then you stop the drug because most people can't afford the $1,000 to $1,500 every month required to stay on the drug. So they stop the drug after, say, 6 months, 12 months, a year and a half. They've lost a bunch of weight, and it all comes rushing back. And even worse, when you regain weight, so a third of that weight loss, of course, is muscle. Even with the GLP-1 agonist, the best they have, anywhere from about 15% to 50%, sometimes more, of that weight is muscle loss. And so when you stop the drug, because you've lost so much muscle, your basal metabolic rate is much lower, you rapidly regain the weight. Or you're stuck paying these people over $1,000 a month to stay on these drugs. And these drugs are not easy to take. They're injectable. They cause a lot of nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and pancreatitis. Pancreatitis is often dismissed as not very important. No, pancreatitis is a very important condition. It's not real common, but it does occur. One, it's excruciating. It feels like somebody shoved a knife in your stomach, and it damages your pancreas. And pancreatic damage is a very serious matter because your pancreas can lose the ability to manufacture digestive enzymes, and you won't be able to digest food properly. And you can lose the pancreatic capacity to produce insulin, and I've actually seen people become type 1 diabetics after a bout of pancreatitis. So you don't want to risk your pancreatitis. That's what these drugs do. So in addition to crushing your finances, they also virtually guarantee weight regain because they are these pharmaceuticals are forms of calorie reduction. Now, bariatric procedures, likewise, they're variations on the theme of reduced calories. So if for instance, you had lap band, they put a constrictor around your stomach to reduce its volume, you're reducing calorie intake. If they do a gastric bypass and allow the esophagus to bypass a lot of the stomach and get to the duodenum, you've reduced the volume of the stomach, you've reduced the intake of calories. So whether it's low-calorie diet or pharmaceutical agent or bariatric procedure, these are all variations on the same theme, calorie reduction. And so all of those methods, diet, pharmaceuticals, bariatric procedures, all virtually guarantee weight regain. Another potential problem with calorie cutting in whatever form to lose weight is that it tends to favor loss of subcutaneous fat as opposed to abdominal visceral fat. Let's talk about what that means. So subcutaneous fat is the fat beneath the skin in the thighs, buttocks, calves, chest, neck, arms. This is fat that is really not very metabolically important. Yes, it's a stress to your weight-bearing joints because they're carrying more weight, they're supporting more weight, but they don't have metabolic consequences. So all the problems with excess weight, whether you're just overweight or obese, comes from the abdominal fat. So this is the fat that encircles your abdominal organs. It's the fat that infiltrates the supportive tissue around your intestines, liver, pancreas, and other abdominal organs. There's a variety of reasons why abdominal visceral fat is much more important for causing health problems than subcutaneous fat. But among those reasons is that abdominal visceral fat is very inflamed. If you were to biopsy some abdominal visceral fat, you would see that's infiltrated with inflammatory white blood cells. causing inflammation, driving inflammation, and some of these inflammatory mediators enter the bloodstream. Now, it's also important to recognize that the abdominal visceral fat, as well as abdominal organs, drain into what's called the portal venous system. And all that is, it's a part of the vein system of your body that drains all the gastrointestinal organs straight to the liver, the portal vein. So the liver is the recipient of a beating from digestive byproducts and bacterial breakdown products from the microbiome in your GI tract. And so a lot of this occurs in the liver. The liver takes the brunt of this flood of compounds. And among the effects is that it causes insulin resistance. That is a poor response to the body's insulin, which is a fundamental driving process for weight gain in the abdomen. So abdominal fat, abdominal visceral fat, generates insulin resistance, which encourages greater accumulation of abdominal visceral fat, so it's a vicious cycle. So part of the key we'll talk about in gaining control over this is to break that cycle of, one, allowing inflammatory mediators to drain to the liver and cause insulin resistance. We're going to get control over insulin resistance, and by doing so, you are given the key to massive, substantial control over body shape, composition, and abdominal visceral fat. By the way, if you did a cross-sectional CAT scan or an MRI of the abdomen, you could see that there's fat infiltrating the abdominal organs. And then on the outside, just below the skin, there's also subcutaneous fat. So those are two very different kinds of fat, but it's the abdominal visceral fat that drives a lot of the troubles associated with abdominal visceral fat. Those inflammatory phenomena and the insulin resistance they encourage are very important for health because they underlie numerous common chronic health conditions, from type 2 diabetes to coronary disease to obesity to autoimmune diseases to neurodegenerative conditions, hypertension, high triglycerides, fatty liver, on and on and on. So this is very important to gain control over abdominal visceral fat, the source of health consequences, not subcutaneous fat. And recall that when you cut calories, your body prefers to lose subcutaneous fat first before it loses abdominal visceral fat. So cutting calories is not only destructive, causing muscle loss and a reduction in metabolic rate, it also tends to favor loss of subcutaneous fat and thereby does not provide you with the full benefit you could have obtained by reducing abdominal visceral fat, such as better insulin responses, lower triglycerides, lower blood sugar, lower blood pressure, etc. Another reason why it's foolhardy to cut calories is that it's well known. There are several studies to this effect that when you cut calories or cut fat in the diet, or do both, cut calories and fat, you leave your gallbladder idle, not having to squeeze and expel its bile. So if you're on a low-calorie diet or low-fat, low-calorie diet, you're not causing the gallbladder to squeeze out its bile. And that allows the bile to crystallize. And so there have been studies like this. People who participate have an ultrasound of their gallbladder. If they have gallstones at the start, they're eliminated. They can't participate. No gallstones, you're included. And then a repeat gallbladder ultrasound 4 weeks later, 8 weeks later, 12 weeks later. So very simple studies. Several have been done, and they all show a dramatic increase in development of gallstones as early as 4 weeks and many more over 12 weeks. In some of the studies, over 50% of the people develop gallstones. And so and that can be dangerous. Some of those people need to have surgery to remove the gallstones because these stones got stuck in the bile duct and caught, very painful, and get very sick very quickly if you don't remove those stones. And that situation is encouraged, dramatically encouraged, by cutting calories or cutting fat or cutting both. So sadly, many people nowadays are turning towards the GLP-1 agonist drugs. These are the drugs like Ozempic, Wegovy, and Rybelsus, and paying a lot of money or having their insurance company paying a lot of money and thereby dumping those costs onto those of us who support the insurance and Medicare systems. So it's raising healthcare costs and it's causing a lot of people to spend a lot of money out of pocket, only to find out they cannot maintain the weight loss because the muscle lost. So these people have a choice. They can be held hostage paying the pharmaceutical industry many thousands of dollars every year, or they can regain the weight and be worse off, because recall that when you regain the weight, it's mostly fat. Typically, you regain only half of the muscle you lost. So you are more unhealthy than you were at the start. And of course, bariatric procedures are disastrous. The American Academy of Pediatrics just recently said that they advise teenagers who are suffering from obesity to go through bariatric procedures. These are not benign procedures. There are a lot of problems. I've seen people die with these procedures, that is, in the months and years afterwards, not during so much during the surgery, but afterwards. Many nutrient deficiencies develop, and SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, occurs with very high frequency. And that has a whole list of consequences of its own. So people develop SIBO. The doctor typically doesn't know what to do about it because they're not keeping up with the science. And you're allowed to have this problem with fecal microbes that have ascended up into the small intestine, 24 feet of small intestine, because the reduced volume of stomach means there's less stomach acid to neutralize microbes being swallowed and to inhibit the ascent of microbes from the colon. And so the loss of stomach acid due to a bariatric procedure allows fecal microbes to climb up and oral microbes to descend. The net result is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And that has all a long list of consequences, including weight regain, type 2 diabetes, worsened insulin resistance, increased risk for coronary disease, increased potential for neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, autoimmune diseases, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. So having a bariatric procedure and allowing this unhealthy overgrowth of bacteria leads to long-term, very serious health impairments. So I think you can see that the conventional approach to weight loss, whether it's calorie reduction, a pharmaceutical, or a bariatric procedure, are deeply flawed. Yet we have doctors dispensing those drugs, the GLP agonists, for instance, or advising their patients to undergo bariatric procedures, even teenagers, either not recognizing or just accepting that there are very bad long-term consequences of any of those choices. All these methods only yield temporary success and almost always lead to long-term failures and even leads to long-term health complications that can be very serious. Why do they do this? Why do they continue to prescribe drugs like the GLP-1 agonists or advise their patients to have bariatric procedure? Because the healthcare industry profits from it. There's a lot of money involved in this. This is not cheap. This is very costly financially, and yet they continue to dispense it because that's how obesity is monetized. Now let's have a word about our sponsors. And when we come back, let's talk about what you can do to take back control over body fat and body composition. The Defiant Health Podcast is sponsored by Paleo Valley, makers of delicious grass-fed beef sticks, healthy snack bars, and other products. We are very picky around here and insist that any product we consider has no junk ingredients like maltodextrin, carrageenan, carboxymethylcellulose, sucralose, and of course, no added sugars. And all Paleo Valley products contain no gluten nor grains. In fact, I find Paleo Valley products among the cleanest of any in their category, and they're truly delicious. One of the habits I urge everyone to get into is to include a fermented food product at least once, if not several times per day, in their lifestyles. Unlike nearly all other beef sticks available, the Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks are all naturally fermented, meaning they contain probiotic bacterial species. And now, Paleo Valley is expanding their Wild Pastures program that provides 100% grass-fed, grass-finished, pastured beef and pastured chicken and pork, raised without herbicides or pesticides and raised in the USA. And they've just added wild-caught seafood caught from the waters of Bristol Bay, Alaska. They're now offering a 20% lifetime discount on every order for a limited time. I'll post the web address in the Defiant Health show notes. Shipping for Paleo Valley products is free for orders of $75 or more. For more information or to order, go to paleovalley.com. That's PaleoValley.com. Enter the coupon code DEFIANT, not case sensitive, for a 15% discount to Defiant Health listeners. The web address is also listed in the Defiant Health show notes that accompany this podcast. And be sure to take a look at their other products, such as their organic super greens, rich with phytonutrients, and their superfood bars that come in dark chocolate chip, apple cinnamon, and lemon meringue. They're low carb, of course, with 8 grams net carbs per bar. The folks at Paleo Valley have lately been busy, recently adding some interesting new products, including pasture-raised fermented pork steaks, chocolate-flavored grass-fed bone broth protein, grass-fed organ complex in capsule form, pumpkin spice superfood bars with grass-fed bone broth protein, and new essential electrolytes in powder form to add to the potassium and magnesium intake of your lifestyle. Available in orange, lemon, and melon flavors. And for listeners to the Defiant Health Podcast, you can apply your discount code for a 15% discount. The discount code can be found in the show notes. I'd like to also introduce you to Defiant Health's newest sponsor, Cutting Edge Cultures, who provides a variety of high-quality starter cultures for your fermenting projects. Including several servings of fermented foods in your daily routine is among the most important practices you can adopt to maintain or restore the health of your gastrointestinal microbiome. Cutting Edge Cultures makes it easy with starter cultures for culturing vegetables with their Culture Veggie Starter, yogurt with the Yogurt Plus Starter, and kefir with Easy Kefir Starter. They've also added LR Superfood Starter to cultivate one of my favorite microbes, Lactobacillus reuteri, and L-Gasseri Superfood Starter to grow Lactobacillus gasseri, both extremely important gut microbes lost by modern people. They also have a convenient prebiotic powder called Prebio Plus that makes it easy to add important prebiotic fibers to coffee, yogurt, or other foods. And you've got to try their Kefir Soda Starter that makes an effervescent soda-like drink filled with healthy probiotic species. Go to Cutting Edge Cultures' website to enter the discount code DEFIANT, not case-sensitive, for a 15% discount for Defiant Health listeners. Web address and show notes. Using Cutting Edge Cultures not only allows you to pick and choose some of the microbes you ferment, but also saves time by cutting back on the amount of time required to ferment your foods. So I hope you now recognize just how ineffective the conventional approach is to weight loss and change in body composition. In fact, is harmful. It actually harms your health long term, whether it's from loss of muscle that leads to frailty, weakness, and increased potential for fractures and osteoporosis, or whether it's the development of SIBO and all its consequences. So let's now talk about a smarter way to accomplish a shift in body composition. And I say shift in body composition, not just weight loss, because what we really want to do is lose the abdominal visceral fat, right? Preferentially. Yeah, you want to lose the subcutaneous fat also, but you really want to focus on losing the abdominal visceral fat most of all, or first, because that's what controls insulin resistance, the process that causes fat to accumulate in the abdomen or prevents your weight loss. So we're going to attack that first. And shift in body composition, meaning there's going to be an increase in muscle mass also. That increases your metabolic rate and makes weight loss faster. And when you have more muscle, you sustain the weight loss. You don't regain it like you would if you lost all that muscle and experienced a downturn in your metabolic rate. So what I want to see happen when you stop listening to this podcast and put all this information into action is that you lose abdominal visceral fat, specifically, preferentially. You reduce insulin resistance and you also start to regain muscle, or at least maintain the muscle you have, but even better, regain the muscle. And I don't mean go to the gym for many hours a week. I'm talking about how you can manage diet and some other factors in order to shift body composition so that you have less fat, less of a tummy, and you have more muscle, whether the muscles in your arms or shoulders or back or other important places. Those are real important and they make you feel better too. So there are four keys to gaining control over body shape, muscle, and fat. The first is to address insulin resistance, as you'd likely guess, because insulin resistance is the driving factor in abdominal weight gain, inflammation, and having your body's organs be poorly responsive to insulin. So people who are insulin resistant tend to have very high levels of insulin in their blood. A slender insulin sensitive person typically has a blood insulin level fasting of about 1 or 2 or maybe 3 micro units. A person who is insulin resistant typically has an fasting insulin level of 40, 90, 130. So it's not 10% worse or 50% worse, it's many fold times worse. And that high blood insulin causes the accumulation of abdominal visceral fat. So we want to get rid of or minimize insulin resistance that allows you to release abdominal visceral fat, and it all adds up. Loss of abdominal visceral fat allows insulin resistance to reverse or be reduced, which in turn allows abdominal visceral fat to be further released, that further reduces insulin resistance, and you gain momentum, and it can happen faster than you normally would think. Well, how do we do that? How do we reverse insulin resistance and inflammation? Well, we stop eating food that raise insulin. What foods are those? Very simple. Wheat, grains, and sugars. The food you were told, at least grains, should dominate your diet. That is absolute nonsense. These are foods that raise blood sugar and thereby blood insulin and lead to insulin resistance. Recall that the amylopectin A carbohydrate of wheat and grains is an extravagant trigger of insulin, as is sugar. So we're going to stop including wheat, grains, and sugar in our diet. And we're also going to reject the idea of cutting fat and saturated fat. There was never any evidence to support the idea that cutting fat or cutting saturated fat provided any kind of health benefits. And adding fat back to your diet does not increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. If you want clarification on that point, see my other Defiant Health podcasts, as well as my many, many blog posts about this on my drdavisinfinitehealth.com blog, as well as many discussions on cardiovascular health in all of my books. And by the way, in this lifestyle, we never limit fat. We never limit calories. You now know that limiting or reducing calories booby traps you and sets you up for guaranteed failure long term. So don't cut fat, don't cut calories, and eliminate the foods that trigger blood sugar and insulin, and watch insulin resistance recede. Watch your abdominal visceral fat shrink. Let's go further. Let's also restore a microbe from the gastrointestinal tract that virtually all Americans have lost, Lactobacillus reuteri. If you've been following my conversations, you know that we cultivate Lactobacillus reuteri as a yogurt. It's not yogurt. I regret calling it yogurt. It looks and smells like yogurt, but it's not yogurt. It has different microbes than conventional store-bought or homemade yogurt. And we also use a process of prolonged fermentation to increase the bacterial numbers of the Lactobacillus reuteri to very high numbers. When we count the number of microbes in a half cup serving, we get around 300 billion. That's part of the success of the yogurt, is we're getting very high numbers of microbes. Now, what's so special about Lactobacillus reuteri? Well, the 6475 strain, that's what most of the data surrounds, available as a commercial product, and I'll put the sources down below in the show notes. You can get it as a product called Gastrus or Osfortis. Gastrus or Osfortis, two different products, but both use the 6475 strain. So we cultivate this strain to very high counts, and when you ingest it, it takes up residence in the entire length of the GI tract. Unique. Most microbes don't do that. But Lactobacillus reuteri is among the few microbes that colonizes the entire GI tract from mouth to anus, including the 24 feet of small intestine. Now, when it does that, when it colonizes the small bowel, it takes up residence there, and it's a great producer of what are called bacteriocins. These are natural antibiotics effective against fecal microbes. In modern people, fecal microbes have been allowed to proliferate and then ascend to where they don't belong, into the 24 feet of small intestine. And now when you re-implant this lost microbe, Lactobacillus reuteri, it colonizes the small intestine, 24 feet of small intestine, and produces bacteriocins, which reduces the numbers of those fecal microbes. Now, how is that a benefit? Well, before reuteri, if you had a small intestine that had an excess of fecal microbes that ascended from your colon, these microbes die. They only live for a few hours. So there's trillions of these microbes in your 24 feet of small bowel. When they die, they release their breakdown products, but specifically one called endotoxin that is a component of their cell wall. And when endotoxin enters the bloodstream, which it can through the very permeable small intestine, unlike the colon, and this endotoxin enters the bloodstream called endotoxemia. And endotoxemia, originating with fecal microbes in the small intestine, is a major and potent driver of insulin resistance. Okay, so when we get Lactobacillus reuteri, we suppress or reduce the number of those fecal microbes because reuteri is killing off those fecal microbes. So that's one way that restoration of Lactobacillus reuteri provides huge advantage in reshaping body composition. Another way is that when reuteri takes up residence in the GI tract, it sends a signal via the vagus nerve, retrograde or reverse, up the vagus nerve to the brain, to the hypothalamus, telling the brain to release the hormone oxytocin. Now, you might recognize oxytocin as the hormone of love and empathy, but it's actually a lot more than that. It's also the hormone of youthful body composition. So among its effects is suppression of appetite. So you are in control of appetite, not something else. It's not something else like desire for sugar or the glide and drive opioid peptides of wheat and grains. You take away the wheat and grains and the sugars, add the suppression of appetite from oxytocin. Oxytocin specifically suppresses snacking behavior, so-called hedonic eating. And so that combination of not limiting fat, not consuming sugars and grains, thereby avoiding glide and derive opioid peptides, and the appetite-suppressing effect of oxytocin gives you magnificent control over appetite. You eat when you need to, not because of the clock, not because of a schedule, not because you're incessantly hungry. You are in control, absolute, complete control of your appetite. And oxytocin has the capacity to stimulate muscle growth. So rather than lose muscle, as you do with the various versions of calorie reduction, we're going to increase muscle mass because oxytocin has been shown to increase muscle mass. So it's been shown in two animal studies, and we're seeing this play out with our yogurt. People are regaining youthful muscle mass. And recall that greater muscle mass puts you in control of metabolic rate. If your metabolic rate goes up because you've acquired some muscle, it's easier to burn calories. It's easier to lose abdominal visceral fat. Another strategy you can add to favorably influence body composition, that is less abdominal fat, more muscle, is to get collagen. Now, humans are supposed to get collagen by consuming organs and meats and boiling the carcass in water and making broths and stews. Please don't hear bone broth. Bone broth is not the way to do this. Bone broth has almost nothing in it. That's quite clear. People consume bone broth thinking they're getting a lot of calcium, magnesium out of it. You do not. You get very minor quantities. And the odd thing is that bone broths are also a significant source of lead, especially if you add vinegar. So if you add vinegar, you cause the lead stored in the bones to be mobilized. Now, the USDA says that ideally there's no lead in drinking water because there's no really safe intake of lead, but they'll permit up to 15 micrograms per liter. But many authorities are saying they're trying to push it down to 10 micrograms. In bone broth, in 1 liter of bone broth, there's 9 micrograms of lead. So bone broth is a source of lead and a minor source of minerals. Now, it's okay to include some bones in your broths, but I think a lot better idea is to make what I call carcass broth. It doesn't sound very appetizing, but making soups and broths from whatever's remaining of the animal. Yes, bones, preferably with the marrow intact, but also ligaments, tendons, some of the meat, whatever organs you can include, and use that instead. You'll have less lead, and you'll have a lot more nutrients, especially collagen. And so that's one way to get collagen. It's a lot of work, of course. So an easier way for many people is to simply supplement collagen peptides or collagen hydrolysates, or use some of the supplements to augment your intake from foods. Now, the dose of collagen depends on the source. So most sources, bovine, cow, porcine, or pig, and chicken, the effective dose is typically in the 10 gram to 20 gram per day range. Now, there's been some newer science using marine sources of collagen. Now, when I say marine, it can mean all different kinds of fish, some of which are bony, some of which are cartilaginous. And so the amount of collagen required from a marine source is not quite certain, but there have been benefits seen with doses as low as 1.5 to 2.5 grams. So far lesser dose of collagen. Now, we need that science to mature to tell us. No one's done a head-to-head comparison, say, of 2.5 grams of marine source collagen versus 10 grams or 20 grams of bovine source. No one's done that yet. But I think if you get a marine source collagen, you can consider using lower doses. And then we'll have to update this conversation as that collagen science improves. But collagen has the capacity to contribute to a reduction in abdominal visceral fat. It increases muscle mass, and it even makes a contribution to improving or reducing insulin resistance. So adding collagen hydrolysates is a major advantage when added to the previous other strategies. The last strategy is to supplement hyaluronic acid. Now, a lot of females, a lot of ladies are familiar with hyaluronic acid because they apply it topically. But think about that. You may pay a lot of money for a hyaluronic acid serum. You apply it, say, to your face, and you see some smoother skin that looks moister and reduced wrinkles. But then you wash your face at night, and it washes off. So you and nor your skin are any healthier for having applied the hyaluronic acid. Why not instead, or in addition to your topical, take the hyaluronic acid orally? We're supposed to, just like collagen, we're supposed to get hyaluronic acid specifically from consumption of brain and skin, and to some degree other organs and meats. But it's brain and skin that's largely the source of hyaluronic acid. Where most modern people don't want to consume brain, many people have developed an aversion to the skin. I see them buying boneless, skinless chicken breasts, for instance. What you should be doing is, if you eat the breast, make sure the skin is there, or even better, get the whole chicken. And then take the carcass that remains and use that to make your broth. Not bone broth, but carcass broth. Now, the health benefits of orally consumed hyaluronic acid are massively underappreciated. So if you take hyaluronic acid orally, and a good dose would be about 100 milligrams, if you ate a 4-ounce piece of sheep or lamb brain, you get about 7 milligrams of hyaluronic acid. So 100 milligrams of hyaluronic acid is a very confident dose. You can take more, I just don't know that it provides further benefit. So a dose in the neighborhood of about 100 milligrams, and this is widely available as powders from many sources. So you consume hyaluronic acid orally, and one of the effects is that it acts as a prebiotic fiber and specifically causes a bloom in the bacterial species Acromantia, Acromantia mucinophila, which is a very important microbe that, when it occupies about 3-4% of the entire gastrointestinal microbiome, helps produce mucus. It helps support other microbes, makes contributions to reducing insulin resistance and blood sugar and blood pressure and other health effects. When you add hyaluronic acid, one of the effects is that it causes a bloom in Acromantia, a modest bloom in Acromantia. And you get an increase to 5%, 6%, 7% of all microbes. And that amplifies those benefits. Augments the intestinal mucus barrier against endotoxemia. It produces the fatty acid butyrate that mediates reduction in blood sugar, insulin resistance, blood pressure, triglycerides, and fatty liver. And hyaluronic acid is very effective in subduing inflammation. Recall that inflammation is a driver of insulin resistance. Now, you could also eat brain and skin, but most people don't want to eat brain. Some people eat some skin, say from poultry or from fish. That helps. Now, when you put all this together, a diet that fails to trigger blood glucose and insulin, getting rid of gliadin-derived opioid peptides that drive appetite, not limiting fat, not limiting calories, restoring this important lost microbe, Lactobacillus reuteri, at high counts by making this yogurt that triggers oxytocin and thereby suppresses appetite and encourages regrowth of muscle and thereby increases metabolic rate. Getting back collagen that we were supposed to get from diet, but you can supplement as a powder, and also getting hyaluronic acid that you likewise were supposed to get from diet, but now you're going to get from a supplement. Put that all together. There's a synergy here. It's a 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 11. In other words, you put this all together, you amplify the benefit. Your abdominal circumference shrinks, your waist circumference shrinks, your insulin level drops dramatically, you release more weight, you maintain muscle or even increase muscle, your metabolic rate goes up, it can even accelerate your weight loss success. I'd like to encourage you to measure your waist circumference. That is, get a tape measure and measure how big your waist is at the start and then track it, maybe every week or every month, something like that. Now, the best way to measure your waist is take that tape measure, locate the top of your hip bone by taking your hand, running down the side of your chest, down to your abdomen. When you hit hard bone of your hip, that's where you want to measure. So wrap the tape measure around your waist. Don't pull it snug so that's pinching, but just snug enough. And then take two nice deep breaths and then exhale. And measure your waist on the exhalation while the tape measure is lightly snug. That's the measure you want. So track that, and you're going to see your waist circumference reduce. Because it gets confusing, right? If you are losing abdominal visceral fat and some subcutaneous fat while gaining muscle, it may look like weight may not be changing much, but your body composition is changing dramatically, and you now know that you're gaining the advantage of more muscle, higher metabolic rate, while also losing all the health impairments of excess abdominal visceral fat, that is insulin resistance and inflammation. You might even consider getting a bioimpedance scale. These are these scales that you typically stand on, and it gives you some measures of body fat, lean muscle mass. And that's an easy thing to track also. Some people say these things aren't that accurate. It doesn't have to be accurate because you're not after accuracy as compared, say, to some other method. You're looking for something to track. So if your lean muscle mass is X and you see it go up or at least not decline, you know you've succeeded. If you see total body fat dropping, you know you've succeeded. Another thing to do is consider looking in the mirror. Because if you're losing abdominal visceral fat while gaining muscle, you're going to see your body shape change. You're going to see your abdominal circumference, your tummy shrink. You may see your arms, your thighs, your shoulders filling out with youthful muscle. So it's important to see these things so that you know you're on the right track. And you're not going to have to do things like stay on a $1,000 a month drug just not to regain 50 pounds. So the whole bottom line here is that you are put back in control over weight and even over body composition. Now, if you've learned something from this Defiant Health podcast, I encourage you to subscribe through your favorite podcast directory, post a review, post a comment, and tell your friends. I hope by now you've recognized you're getting a different kind of information from this Defiant Health podcast than what your doctor or people in healthcare might tell you. I hope you recognize that what you're getting is, I think, thoughtful, scientifically minded, and effective and safe information. Thanks for listening.